Welcome back to our study of Exodus. We are in the 26th chapter, and we want to start off this evening with a correction. We talked about, if you'll remember, the tenons and the sockets. Remember, on the north side and on the south side, there were 20 boards on each side, if you'll remember. And each one of those boards had a tenon underneath it, remember? But do you remember reading there were 40 sockets? And so instead of, I left out a line, if that makes any sense. So there would be two sockets under each board if we understand that correctly. So we wanted to make sure we pass that correction along, because we don't want to teach error. That's for sure. Is there anything else?
You just left the line out.
I just left the line out, yeah. It's not a big deal, but it kind of is a big deal. So, to me. Huh? Yeah, the tenon and the sockets. All right, we're going to pick up with verse 36 of chapter 26. I'm just going to go ahead and read that. And thou shalt make a hanging for the door of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet and fine twine linen wrought with needlework.
So this veil is serving as, well, I guess we would call a door of the tabernacle. And it was made from white woven linen materials of blue, purple, and scarlet. And if I understand this correctly, when I say materials, I'm talking about probably thread or this type thing, that it was to be linen with intricate embroidered work with these various colors in it. And, you know, we've looked at some things, and I'm not seeing this in the pictures, but this white was very significant. I mean, he if you look it up, it means white, bleach, okay? Mm-hmm. And so when he says white linen, the predominant background of that curtain is white with the embroidered work. And so, I mean, this absolutely beautiful handiwork, craftsmanship, and all that. I've said many times since we've been studying this that I sure would like to have seen that tabernacle as it was, because I've got a feeling it's beyond our imagination.
You know what amazes me is today you hear about people talking, you know, saying that we're so advanced with our technology today and we're so advanced in how we can do things. But you look at the quality of the buildings today versus the quality of buildings from 100 years ago, like the one that we're in right now. And the buildings today, they're far less superior to what used to be built, the craftsmanship. And so I can only imagine the craftsmanship. I say I can only imagine, but to be fair with you, I really can't.
If you think about it, they're 40 years in the wilderness with this. But that doesn't end. Once they enter into the promised land, this tabernacle is set up at Shiloh. That's where Eli the priest was. And so this had to be extremely durable, not sloppy work, but mm-hmm. craftsmen indeed, of all sorts.
Yes, absolutely. Verse 37, and thou shalt make for the hanging five pillars of shittim wood, and overlay them with gold, and their hooks shall be of gold, and thou shalt cast five sockets of brass for them.
So you think about this, five columns to hang that curtain on to where you can't see inside of the holy place, but these columns were shittim wood overlaid with gold. And if you have columns overlaid with gold, I mean, think of the value of that. And they're there to support or to hang the veil on. And then there are gold hooks that were made into the columns to hang the veil. And then on the base of it, where the ground, there were brass sockets that were cast to support the columns so the wood's not touching the ground. I mean, this is obviously well thought out by God.
So when we move to chapter 27, this gives us the dimensions and the type of materials to be used for the altar, for burnt offerings and its utensils, the materials and dimensions for the court of the tabernacle, and the maintenance of the candelabra. In verses 1 and 2, "And thou shalt make an altar of shittim wood, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits broad, and the altar shall be 4 square, and the height thereof shall be 3 cubits, and thou shalt make the horns of it for the upon the 4 corners thereof. His horns shall be of the same, and thou shalt overlay it with brass."
So when you look at this, obviously this is what we usually call the brass altar, or some people call it the brazen altar. And I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. This thing is square. It's 7.5 feet long, width, 4 square, same all the way around. And it's 4.5 feet high. And then it has protrusions coming up at the top, which is called the horns of the altar. And all this was one structure. And this is made of it's shittim wood, but it's overlaid with brass. Now, if you look in the like you look this up in the Strong's Concordance, the word brass, you get the definition copper. Some translations say copper, some say brass, some say bronze. Well, we're going to rule out bronze for logical reasons. But here's an interesting thing, is that the brass is made of 66% copper and 33% zinc, to where bronze is made of copper and tin. I think it's 12% tin. I had to go back and research this. It's been many years since I had my metallurgy class, so it's 88% copper, 12% tin is what gives you the bronze color. And this is the brass is obviously more reflective than the copper, but also the brass is more it's harder and it's more durable than just pure copper. Copper is a pure ore. Brass and bronze is not a pure ore. Brass being copper and zinc, and bronze being copper and tin. Okay? And so I'm going to stay with brass just from the things that I'm seeing. It's high percent copper anyway. Okay? But nevertheless, when you look at the laver, and if you look all the way through where it's talking about this is made of brass, this is a set in sockets of brass, it's the same Hebrew word. Now, when we get to one place, I think it's in the 38th chapter of Exodus, you'll find it says the looking glasses of women. Of course, women's not in the Hebrew. It just says looking glasses, which means if you look a definition up, it's the mirror. It's the mirror that the women would use. Well, if you've ever looked into polished brass, it has a mirror effect. You can actually see yourself. But you won't do that in copper, not to the point. You're probably not going to get in front of a sheet of copper and comb your hair, you understand? But you could possibly do that with grass, especially for the high-polished brass. And so that's why that you're going to hear me use brass as we go through this, even though the definition that Strong's gives us copper, brass is a high content of copper, 66%, okay?
Okay. 3.
Plus, it's not as corrosive as copper. And you think about this, I mean, Heather mentioned it earlier, you think about 40 years in the wilderness with this exposed to the weather. I am sure in 40 years, every day was not a sunshiny day.
Hmm.
And every day was not the same temperature. So you have a variation of temperature. You have elements that, especially like your outer court, where this is, there was no covering over it, how this material is exposed. That altar is sitting right out there in the open. That laver is in the open, so they are exposed to the elements. And then the thinking of carrying these things for 40 years and breaking down, setting up, and all this, you had to have durable materials and durable metal. Which here again just reiterates the fact of the craftsmanship was also somewhat phenomenal as well. Good craftsman, good material, consequently this thing lasts. I tell you this from my experience in the Navy for 4 years, that you'll find on their vessels they use brass. Their portholes and all this you'll find is brass. The compass and things, it's in brass. It's more durable. Now, you know, it has to be polished, obviously, because of all the salt water that it's exposed to. But this lasts for many, many years. Even after they sink, divers will go down and pull the brass off of the boats or the ships, whatever the case is.
That's good.
I thought that might be helpful.
It was very helpful. I didn't think about that. That's great. Verse 3, "And thou shalt make his pans to receive his ashes, and his shovels, and his basins, and his flesh hooks, and his fire pans, all the vessels thereof, thou shalt make of brass."
So you have pans, obviously, to catch the ashes. In other words, this altar, they're burning sacrifices every day of this altar, offering sacrifices. Which, let me explain something about a sacrifice. That altar is like, it's cooking your meat. You're grilling. Okay? And so, obviously, they have not propane, but they're using wood for the fire. And so they have to have some means of taking those ashes out. If you've ever burned wood stove, you know what I'm talking about, even with a fireplace. Then that has to be maintained on a regular basis. And so you have to have utensils for cooking, a shovel for taking the ashes out. All this is made of brass. And brass has a high melting point. I don't remember right off the top of my head what it is, but it seems like it's a little less than 2,000 degrees, where aluminum's like 1,220 degrees. So these utensils are made of materials that are durable for the matter at hand, okay? And so when you think of a sacrifice, think that thing is offered to the Lord, but it's eaten by people. Okay? That was the priest's diet. And, of course, the people that brought the sacrifice, they could get a, depending on the sacrifice, they could get a portion. But that's what they're living off for all those people that don't want to swear against red meat or meat. You know more than God, because God made that the diet for the priest. You know, cow is red meat. And so that was one of the things. And then goat and sheep. So for people that don't want to eat meat, you know, that's up to you. You know, but I can tell you this, don't teach it as a doctrine. Because then you're teaching against the Scriptures. And Moses did live to be 120 years old. But that red meat didn't get him for a long time. You didn't know all that was in there, did you?
And thou shalt make for it a grate of network of brass, and upon the net shalt thou make four brazen rings in the four corners thereof, and thou shalt put it under the compass of the altar beneath, that the net may be even to the midst of the altar.
Now, Helen and I spent quite a bit of time today trying to figure this thing out, okay? And so while she was teaching this afternoon, I got back in there.
Good.
And so I'm going to present something. I'm just not going to set it in concrete, okay?
Okay.
A grate of brass with a network appearance, in other words, if you know what expanded metal is, it's or a coarse screen, you know, that's what we're talking about, cross. You ever play tic-tac-tay?
Yeah.
Network, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so this is a network of brass. This is the way this thing is cast. That's made for the altar of burnt offering. And then it says on the four corners of what we call today a grate, cast into that four rings, obviously, of brass. And then the grate was put in the middle of the altar, or halfway. And so if you want a half, 4.5 feet, then that's where this grate set in the altar. Now, we were discussing about what the purpose of those rings. Why is it saying rings are banned? And then he's not saying anything about how that grate is supported,
yeah,
or whatever. And looking at, just researching some more, and I mentioned this to Heather, it's a possibility that there was slots cut in the side of the altar, of the altar on either side, and the rings, you put the grate in like so,
mm-hmm,
and those rings protruded out, and then you put the poles through those rings for the purpose of carrying the altar. Well, when I got to looking a little later this afternoon, several of your translations suggest that the rings made to the grate were for the poles to slide through for carrying the altar. Now, what you're going to find out about the detail that's given is it's not 100% detailed.
Yeah.
We're getting sort of a summary view or an account of how this was made. But we're not getting all the detail of how it was made, like the diameter of the pole or the diameter of the ring, mm-hmm, or the spacing in the network. All those things are important if you're the one making it. And we're not the ones making it. Bezalel was responsible for that, he and Aholiab. And so what we're getting is like a general overview to where we know what the... If this altar is, for instance, 7.5 by 7.5 and 4.5 feet high, that's the visual that we get out of it. You follow me? And so to sit here and try to figure everything out is an impossibility because we don't have all the dimension. It's like getting a blueprint that doesn't have all the dimensions on it and trying to make something from the blueprint. Well, you're going to have to talk to the person that designed this thing to get the proper dimensions, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not important for us because we're not making it, you understand? It was important to the builders, the craftsmen, the makers. You with me? And so you don't want to get frustrated in trying to research something that is impossible to get the answer to because it isn't there. And so otherwise you can be speculating, just like I did, of how that altar is carried, or the grates going through the side for the poles to slide through. Because really, when we get on into this, we don't find exactly what where these rings were, other than it says in the end of the altar, which is in the end of the grate. So that's a possibility. But you're not going to have to carry it, right? You're not going to have to assemble.
No.
But it does interest me.
Mm-hmm.
I like to know how things work.
Verse 6. And thou shalt make staves for the altar, and staves of shittim wood, and overlay them with brass. And the staves shall be put into the rings, and the staves shall be upon the two sides of the altar to bear it.
So what some of the translations do is run these sentences together to where he's talking about the rings. Rings made on the end of the grate, and the grate was halfway up the altar, and then they say to put the poles of shittim wood through. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so these poles are made of shittim wood overlaid with brass, and that was for carrying the altar, and they're put into rings on the side of the altar. Well, where did those rings come from? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I want you to think about. You have this altar 7.5 feet by 7.5 feet by 4.5 feet wide with a grate of solid brass with these rings. You have these poles of shittim wood overlaid with brass, and the way that's transported for 40 years through the wilderness is on men's shoulders. I'm telling you, these priests were not wimpy little guys. And there was something else about that, I think we'll see later on, is those who carried those had to be between the ages of 30 and 50. Mature enough, but yet strong enough. Mature enough to treat it as sacred. Strong enough to be able to endure. They couldn't carry those things on carts. They had to be carried on shoulders.
Verse 8, hollow with boards shall thou make it, as it was showed thee in the mount, so shall they make it.
So obviously, if you think about it, this altar would have to be hollow in order to build a fire in it to cook, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is hollow, as far as forming the structure, is hollow inside. And here again it's reiterated that it's to be made according to the pattern that Moses saw in the mountain. Now, what does all this mean? I don't know. But I know that he saw this in the mountain. They made a replica of what Moses saw. So where was that? In heaven. And in the Revelation, you can see how they saw into the tabernacle or temple in heaven.
Mm.
You understand? So Moses is seeing this thing. Now, I don't have a clue as to what all this means. But sacrifices before the Lord is extremely important. The labor that we'll get to, the cleansing of the priest before they could go in to the tabernacle itself. All these things have significance. And here's the thing. Jesus had to fulfill that law. And so all these things are giving you some insight into Jesus, just the natural into Jesus of what he is to us and what he has done for us.
And thou shalt make the court of the tabernacle for the south side, southward. There shall be hangings for the court of fine twined linen, of 100 cubits long on one side, and 20 pillars thereof, and their 20 sockets shall be of brass. The hooks of the pillars and their filters shall be of silver. And likewise, for the north side in length, there shall be hangings of 100 cubits long, and as 20 pillars, and their 20 sockets of brass. The hooks of the pillars and their filters and their, fillets of silver. And for the breadth of the court on the west side shall be hangings of 50 cubits, their pillars 10, and their sockets 10.
So there's a courtyard that was made to surround the tabernacle, the tent, if you will, okay? And this courtyard was 150 feet long and 75 feet wide. If you remember, the tabernacle is 45 feet long and 15 feet wide. So it's sitting inside this courtyard. And then on this courtyard, instead of having a solid wall, like the tabernacle had a solid wall, or I say solid wall, it had boards of shittim wood, okay, overlaid with gold.
Yeah.
The outer court, this courtyard that surrounded it, it was actually columns set up and then curtains hanging on the column to give it a privacy to set this area off. And it says there's 20 columns on the sides that set in 20 sockets of brass. That's on the north side and the south side, the 150-foot length. And then curtains were to hang on these rods. And he gives a little bit of detail of white woven linen concerning the curtains. They're providing the sides, and then there's hooks on the columns that the curtains hang on, and there's rods. Actually, the curtains hanging on rods. The rods are hanging on hooks extended from one column to another. And if you've ever hung curtains in a house, you know what do we mean by suspended on a rod.
Uh-huh.
And then on the west end of the court, which was on the back side of the tabernacle, there were 10 columns. And they were supported on 10 sockets. Now, at this point in time, I don't know what those columns were made of. I can assume that they were made of shittim wood because they're setting in sockets, you understand, so they don't touch the ground. But I've looked, and here again, this was something that I didn't see that they gave detail on the type material here, but all the way through, they're using shittim wood to make these boards, these other things, okay?
And the breadth of the court on the east side, eastward, shall be 50 cubits.
Now, the east side is the entrance. There's so much that can be taught from this as far as spiritual parallel. There's only one entrance. There's no back door. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
And so you enter the courtyard, the opening on the east side. The opening of the tent was also on the east side. And you'll find that when they set up camp, Moses and Aaron's family were on the east side guarding that entry to the tabernacle, you understand? And then you had the Gershonites and the Merarites and the Kohathites covering the other, the two sides and the back side. Then, outside of them, you had your 12 tribes camped around the tabernacle. And you see, when we get into Numbers, we get the detail of this because there was an orderly way they were camped, which is absolutely incredible. This tribe was to lead Judah first. Judah's always first, okay? They left first, they arrived first. Now, what's interesting about this is how he embedded the Gershonites and the Merarites in there to where they would arrive at the next campsite before the holy vessels got there that the Kohathites carried. And so the structure could be set in place, and then you walk in and start putting the holy things in place. Now, another thing to think about, and I forgot to look. I need to look at this. I've got it written out. But they were at 40 or 41, 42 different camp locations. Now, I mean, think about that as far as the movement goes, okay? And so think of the area. They've got to have a flat area to set all this up for the courtyard. You don't want your tent sitting on the side of a mountain or something. And so the Spirit of God is going before them, the cloud that's leading them, and the cloud says, this is where you set up camp. This is the most conducive place for you. Well, the Spirit of God leads us into the most conducive place for us. That's why it's so important to follow the Spirit of God. He's searching out the place for you, so to speak. Okay? And so just think about that. I mean, this is a massive movement when they are relocating from one campsite to another campsite. This is not done in just a few hours. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of murmuring and complaining along the way, just like there's a lot of murmuring and complaining against God today. People don't like God's way. People don't like God's method. But I've learned this, that He's smarter than I am, and He's smarter than you are. And so His way has to be better. And so it's to our advantage to cooperate with Him, even though He may take us through some hard places. He knows where to take us. And just because there's not water there doesn't mean there's not water there. The potential for water is there. We just have to keep focused on God to tap into the potential. You with me? It's the same way with us as individuals.
The hangings of one side of the gate shall be 15 cubits, their pillars 3, and their sockets 3. And on the other side shall be hangings 15 cubits, their pillars 3, and their sockets 3.
Well, I never did even get into the dimensions on that east side.
No, you didn't.
The bottom line, what he's saying, is obviously 75 feet wide because it is a rectangular courtyard. It's the same length on both sides, it's the same width on the back and the front, west side, east side. And now there's curtains that not covering the whole east side, with just like you just run a line down through there. But now we have these columns set up on the east side to where there has to be an entrance on the east side to access the courtyard. And so he tells us that on each side is 22 and a half feet. If you want to do the cubic at 18 inches, do your multiplication, divide it by 12, you can get, you'll find it's 22 and a half feet. And so on this 22 and a half feet, these curtains are hanging on three columns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Obviously, one column would go all the way to the side of the wall, if I can say it that way, the hangings on the other side. And then 22 feet over is your last one, and in the middle you have these curtains hanging, the same on both sides. And so you have a 22 and a half and a 22 and a half, which is how much?
45.
So if you're good at your math, 45? 22 and a half, 22 and a half. 2 and 2 is 4, put two halves together, that's 1, then you get to 5, okay? That means that the opening, the entrance then, in that this is 75 feet wide, would be 30 feet. Right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, sir.
Remember, they're bringing animals into this courtyard to be sacrificed. So it takes more than a 3 or 4 foot door. Okay?
Yeah, heard that. Okay. Verse 16.
I didn't ever talk about what you just read, did I?
Yes, sir.
Did I?
You just did.
Good. Go ahead and
okay.
Get the next one. If we have time.
Okay. And for the gate of the court shall be a hanging of 20 cubits of blue and purple and scarlet and fine twined linen wrought with needlework, and their pillars shall be 4 and their sockets 4.
So he specifically states 20 cubits, right? So that's 30 feet. And to make this curtain is white woven linen, intricately embroidered with blue, purple, scarlet, and to be hung on 4 columns.
Yeah.
Okay? And then they're to be set in brass sockets. So we're assuming that these columns also made of shittim wood. Okay? You got all that?
Yeah.
So you can draw it out, right? All right, we'll stop here and take a break, and we'll pick back up with this and after the break.
I had some thoughts about that altar I want to ask you.